Thank you for joining me for another Quick Hits Conversation. I'm Dr. Robin. With me today, I have Jim Shulman, Jeff Mangum, and Sarah Oblick-Spiker. The question I want to ask, where is the balance between self-regulation and authenticity? This question came up for me because I was talking to someone about how toddlers who are unregulated and throw tinter tantrums end up in timeout. As adults, we're not allowed to do that, but is that inauthentic? Sarah, can you kick us off on this topic?
I love your segue into the topic because as a mom of two little ones, I never, not once, put either one of them on a timeout. What I have come to believe as a parent is that the society we have right now might just be the consequence of all the timeouts when we're forced to deal with our emotions on our own. And then like, oh, it's unsafe to express them to begin with, so let me just suppress them. Back to the actual question, the balance and the line between self-regulation and authenticity. I think authenticity right now is kind of a buzzword, especially in the coaching industry. The guiding for me personally is, I would say authenticity is what comes from heart. And you know, when it comes from heart, it feels light, it feels expansive, it feels fun and warm. Self-regulation might be driven by intellect. It might be driven by ego. It might be driven by fear. And you know, when you're pressing on brakes, perhaps because you want to control the outcome. So that's where I would start.
Okay.
Yeah, those are interesting observations, Sarah. I think one way to look at it might be sort of philosophically, the golden mean that Aristotle talks about, or the middle way. In other words, not being at one extreme or the other. So in terms of authenticity, one could be outgoing and welcoming, which is good. Mm-hmm. Whereas at the other extreme, one can be overbearing. So I think in sort of doing a self-analysis and regulating one's own behaviors and approaches, sort of maybe strive for that middle ground where you're not at one extreme or the other. I sometimes call that the Goldilocks approach, or the three bears approach, I should say, where the porridge isn't too hot, too cold, it's sort of just right. That's, I think, generally a good zone to be in.
I took a view as a journey about authenticity, and then where the exceptions might be. For instance, how do you feel in your life when you're not authentic? And most people are taught to regulate themselves, certainly in schools for behavior. Or a question of, if I'm going to get a grade in college, is the professor going to like me or not like me? It's exhausting. And for most people, there comes a time when they realize on some level of self-actualization that it isn't worth being exhausted. Dr. Robin, for instance, you covered that beautifully in your book on disputes from your own experience when you realized I'm editing too much and I'm not being true to myself. I found roughly 20 years ago when I just threw the filter in the garbage that not only did I feel better, but I attracted clients who valued that. Yeah. And I wound up only working with people where we really connected on that level and we could be unfiltered. There is an exception that I thought of in going through this question, and that is, do I want to get involved in a muck pit? Are there places where the conversation or the relationship is just going to land in something that's not productive and is something that's going to annoy everybody concerned? An example might be, I have a relative whose politics are the diametric opposite of that. If I were authentic and gave my opinion and the logical reasons for it, it would be completely superfluous. We'd wind up at each other's throats. And I just looked at that and I said, I don't want to bother. I want to care for myself and just step away from that.
Yeah. But it wasn't even that an authentic side of you, like tapping into the part of you where you are able to discern, like, I'm not getting involved in that. And it just depends on the environment and it depends on the role that you're playing in this specific time.
Well, I looked at it as, if my authentic self is opening my mouth whenever I feel that there is a disagreement or I have something to add or something bothers me,
yeah,
Well, if that's the primary version, yes, I look at that as a separation from authenticity when I don't say something.
Yeah.
However, I can see where you're coming from about the integration, and maybe that is a piece of authenticity.
And I've seen authenticity used as an excuse to be mean. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just being real. I'm being authentic. No, you're being mean. So I think there's a self-regulation responsibility of you can be authentic and truthful and honest and kind at the same time.
On that self-regulation theme, Robin, there's an acronym in the communications world, the SWOT analysis: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. And one way to sort of foster that regulation is to ask yourself, what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? And again, your strengths might be a very outgoing personality, for mm-hmm. example, but the weakness might be you overdo it too much. So that might be a little template to use in doing a little bit of self-analysis, and also working with clients, sort of helping them steer through those potential minefields.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to circle back to something you said, Sarah, about how we raise children and how we give them permission to have their feelings and express their feelings. Because I think that in an appropriate setting, being able to express your feelings effectively is an important part of being an adult. And I think you're right. There are so many of us who get into trouble because we don't know. We self-regulate so much that we end up with a volcano method where we explode rather than having a reasonable conversation.
Yeah. I bring an outlook from an European. I was not born and raised here. So I'm removed several degrees and I'm trying to balance what is socially acceptable here. That's not going to get me in trouble with the social services. And what I grew up with. It's always a balancing act. And at the end of the day, a lot has to do with who are we comparing ourselves to and what is this big box that we're trying to squeeze ourselves in, everybody else. And that brings the question of neurotypical versus neurodivergent person. Because now we're expecting of a neurodivergent person to self-regulate based on the standards that neurotypical work has put in place.
Mm.
How are we dealing with that, allowing them to be authentic?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one way that I found to be very effective is at the beginning of a conversation, is the person who is not neurotypical discussing that? In other words, before we meet, this is how I think, this is how I process information. So as a result, we can have a much richer conversation, knowing that there may be limits. You can be authentic as long as you understand the parameters. And it may be that somebody might say, I don't know how to have a conversation with somebody who doesn't pick up cues. That's great. It throws it to the other person's authenticity. I've seen challenges where the non-neurotypical person is afraid to divulge their condition because they feel they're going to be rejected out of hand. And that becomes an issue of how comfortable the person feels being themselves.
Yeah. Which, you know, to me, it's very similar to conversation, like, why do they have to learn how to navigate our world? Where is our responsibility, them versus us, to meet them? Whether it's neurodivergence, whether it's homosexuality, whether it's trans and gender fluidity, it's expected of them, of the marginalized society, to adapt and to introduce themselves and say, hey, these are my quirks, this is where I'm different, so the masses can adopt that.
Yeah. Well, I also look at, I'm going to go back to the issue of, is it a time waste? If you divulge at the beginning any anomalies from what is perceived as normal thinking, normal behavior, it allows the other person to absent themselves if they feel that it is something where they're uncomfortable or they don't want to engage. So it goes back to, it saves time.
I think there's a huge part of who's responsible for self-regulating themselves. Is it my responsibility, if I put myself in the neurotypical camp, is it my job to regulate myself for someone who's not neurotypical? Is it their job to tell me and self-regulate? I think that there's got to be a balance. There's got to be a, we're humans, let's give each other some grace and some space. And if your authenticity brushes up against me and in a way that makes me feel unhappy, then I need to be able to say, hey, what's going on here? Little issue. And I think that's the biggest issue, is we don't do a good job of giving each other grace and having those in-between conversations where the pieces don't line up quite right.
I think it's the same with the issue of free speech, for example. Your freedoms end where somebody else's rights begin, and mm-hmm. responsibilities just as much.
You're free to air punch as much as you want, but if you get close to me, you better stop doing it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, that is our 10 minutes. So I'm going to cut us off there. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me. We clearly could go on for a long time. So thank you. And I appreciate it. And I'll talk to you all again really soon.